Blog Talk Radio.
Progressive News Network Extra with Brooke Hines. I'm the Extra. Today is Wednesday, October 23, and the Bernie blackout continues. Today we're here talking with a special guest on some polling issues. If you've tuned in from Twitter, then you're probably aware, if you're in my Twitter circles, you're probably aware of these stories that broke yesterday about a poll out of University of North Florida that did a head-to-head matchup between Democratic presidential candidates and Donald Trump, and then also repeated with Mike Pence and the top two. Now, the poll was noted for leaving Bernie Sanders off. Thank you, listener. I love it when people text me to let me know that they can hear me, because that sometimes is an issue. We love Blog Talk Radio. We really do. Okay, so as all of this was unfolding yesterday, the first thing that happened was the publication The Hill did a story after the press release from University of North Florida's Public Opinion Research Lab, or PORL, which is very hard to say. And their little story was a poll: Biden and Warren both beat Trump and Pence in Florida. And so you read through it, and if you're a Sanders supporter, or if you're just generally interested in politics, you're going to look through it and see who else beats Trump and Pence in Florida, or if they don't. And lo and behold, Bernie Sanders was left off of this poll. And so people started talking about this on social media last night. And I'm getting ready to bring in our special guest who offered some very special insight into this. We have Ellie the Leftist, who responded in Silly Rabbit, who runs an account called Nate's Liver, which is a parody of Nate Silver. And Ellie says, I work for the lab that ran this poll. When I asked our director why Bernie wasn't included, saying that he's a top three candidate, I was told, quote, not for long. And she goes on, this man thinks it's more likely that a Republican Senate will remove Donald Trump than Bernie is likely to stay strong in the polls. So, and then there's some other really interesting stuff in the thread, but I'm going to go ahead and bring on Ellie the Leftist. Do we have you on the line?
Hello, yes.
Hi. So glad that you could join us today, and I want to really thank you for speaking up and providing some insight into this polling situation. So tell me a little bit about what you do with the Public Opinion Research Lab at University of North Florida.
Okay, yes, good. I think it's important to clear this up because I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I'm getting the vibe that people think I'm a bigger deal than I am at the lab, because I know people are asking me a lot, like, for the funding data, and I just don't have that. I'm sure it's publicly available information, and you can get your hands on it, but I don't know those numbers off the top of my head. So I am bottom rung at the lab. I am one of the people making the phone calls. But I'm one of the ones conducting the actual polls.
Mm-hmm. So, from my standpoint, as someone who's been a campaign manager, when I work with a polling firm to do polling, then you're the person who is making sure the dials go out. Is that right?
Yes, and I'm the one that's talking to respondents, recording their responses, and that's it. I do.
Wow, that's
I'm the
that's
one
really.
You, and I'm the one who you tell to screw off and stop calling.
I'm sorry. We never say that here. We always take the polls. And we have a landline, which is totally weird, and it's only because I do politics. So being on the front lines like that, and that's really special, because I know a lot of polling firms, when they do live polling, they have they do contracting with people in call centers, people who aren't actually in the polling business, to run through the script and get the responses. And so I sort of feel like having someone who's familiar with the polling business, or who is associated more closely with the organization, I feel like that's a better practice.
Sure. And we kind of fill that role for other people.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work too, to go through. So this poll had, was it almost 600 respondents?
I believe so.
Okay. And so for those
630.
And did you make 630 calls?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
So as I mentioned in one of my tweets, I was not actually in the lab for this poll, which is why I was so surprised when our director was showing us the results and I saw that Bernie was left out, and that's why I was so mad about it, and I confronted him, because I hadn't seen this beforehand. But whenever we conduct these polls, I mean, we do thousands of calls a day, and these polls can run for weeks or even months at a time. Something like this, an election poll typically goes on for about 2 weeks, and I would say we make anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 calls a day.
Wow.
The response rate is super low. I mean, you're lucky to be getting like one or two completed polls an hour per person.
Wow. And you know, that's for somebody who is not conversant in these kind of instruments and how this work is done, I bet that is shocking to hear, because we kind of we live in a time where you can do call fire, or, you know, a robocall, and just, you know, do it digitally and let it go, and all of that stuff happens on the back end like magic. But polls that have real people running through the questions and getting real responses, that's a different kind of poll. That's you're getting from the campaign side, we view that as much higher quality. And so for me, when I saw this, the way that this particular poll was being talked about in the media, I was kind of disappointed, because, you know, this is a polling lab associated with the university, and I expect higher quality out of them. And yet the way that it got talked about in the media was that this is the matchup between Democratic candidates and Donald Trump versus Mike Pence. It just seems like one of those things where if you weren't looking for Bernie Sanders, maybe you wouldn't have even questioned that he wasn't in the poll. Or, and this is where I think that the bias of not putting Bernie Sanders in is really damaging. Or, if you're just kind of a person who's casually taking in the news, and you see a poll like this and Bernie Sanders isn't mentioned, the message that's sent to the listener or the reader is that Bernie Sanders doesn't matter, or he's irrelevant, or he didn't even merit being included in this.
Or even if you want to take that idea further, you could even make people think that maybe he dropped out after his heart attack.
That's a good point. And so let's talk about, there was some rationale that the lab director provided. Michael Binder, faculty director at Public Opinion Research Lab, gave a statement to Front Page Politics yesterday, and he was asked, pretty much just, why did you leave off Bernie Sanders? And his response was this, and this was written by email. As with all polls, it's a balance between number of questions and length of survey. I made the call to include the top two candidates and then two others that may provide some interest to the public and are in potentially different positions. And then he says, Buttigieg is rising and Harris has stalled. So I'm going to stop there. It's a little bit longer, but I'm going to stop there and examine, get your feedback on that. What do you think about the call to include the top two and then two folks who are polling much lower?
It's completely devoid of logic, and this answer is complete nonsense. If this is his actual reason for doing the poll the way he did, then when I asked 2 days ago why he left Bernie Sanders out, he would have given me this response. Because if this was his answer, then it would have been something he decided before we even ran the poll. He made this up the day after I questioned him.
Interesting. That's really interesting. So I'm getting the sense from you that he wasn't expecting to get questioned on this.
I don't think so. I mean, I remember I mentioned my tweet. He was asking a group, like, he was showing us the poll results, and he said, so you've got the poll results, you're an outside observer. What do you ask the pollster? Do you have any questions for the pollster? And I shot up, and I was like, yeah, where's Bernie Sanders? And he just started laughing. I'm floored over here. I'm like, what are you laughing about? And he basically questions me, because I pushed on it, and he's like, well, why should he be included? I'm like, because he's a top three candidate. And that's when he gave me the not for long comment, and then just moved on.
Have you noticed any in any other polling situation any kind of bias like this, or is this something new that is just cropped up with this particular presidential primary?
It's really difficult to say, because when you talk about bias in polling, I think there are two distinct categories of intentional and unintentional. This leaving Bernie Sanders out is a example of intentional bias. And I think that's not too common in polls with candidates, like election polls, because it's really hard to do that unless you just leave candidates out. Because you can't, there's only so many ways you can reword a will you vote for this person poll.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, like, this example is an intentional bias in the polling, or you've got, for instance, Mike Gravel being left out of the DNC-approved polls and so not making the debate. Those are the only noteworthy examples I can think of.
And I noticed in the discussion that was happening on Twitter, there was a poster, and I'm trying to find my screenshot of this, and they made a really good point. Foggy Dew on Twitter, when Binder brings up the standards, principles of professional practice and the conduct of our work, the very first segment, and this was brought up, by the way, when he was asked about, you know, is this ethical? Why did you design the poll like this? And his response was, we adhere to this set of principles, the industry standard. And the very first line is, we will exercise due care in developing research designs. which I believe this is what this falls under, whether or not you decide to include, you know, how you include the folks being polled. And he says, Foggy Deuce says, he says that this is a bias that was introduced in the initial selection process. There is no ethical or research design claim that you can make to exclude Bernie Sanders. And that was something that was brought up in the article, also in the article on from Front Page Politics, where, so like, this article is reporting the controversy, and then there's some editorializing at the end. And at the end, this writer says that he makes the case for Bernie Sanders being interesting and worthy of being polled because, number one, he was the largest fundraiser. Number two, he's recovered from a heart attack and come back amazingly. And number three, he was just endorsed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, two of the squad, which is a coveted endorsement, and just had a huge, you know, comeback rally, which would have been, that would have been post having done this research, of course. But you know, these are, and Bernie Sanders is Jewish. The only other Jewish candidate is Marianne Williamson. So there's a lot of arguments for Bernie Sanders being newsworthy and a diverse choice. And what I'm hearing from when Binder says that he believes Bernie Sanders isn't going to be in the race or not for long, quote unquote, that's a form of bias in terms of he doesn't perceive that candidate as a serious candidate. I see that more as what's going on than, like, let's say, we're just going to exclude him because I think number one, we're going to exclude him because I have a financial interest in supporting somebody else, or I'm going to exclude him because I have a political interest in seeing other people polled. I don't think it's, what I'm hearing is he kind of gave like a horse laugh to this candidate, like, he's not going to be there for long, so we don't need to cover him. And it was just, and so he's just been dismissive of him. Does that sound, am I on the right track?
I think you have it exactly right. I know there's a lot of talk on Twitter about how, like, going back to the funding question and how money is probably influencing this decision in the polling, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's easy to jump to that conclusion when you're used to dealing with the uber corrupt punditry class and the elected officials. I think it makes more sense for those types. But in this instance, I don't think money is the problem here. I think you're right. I think he probably leans closer to the center or more right wing, and he just doesn't believe Bernie Sanders is a serious candidate personally. So he leaves him out because it's not interesting to him. In that email that you read like half of, he went on to say something about how the objective was that they were concerned about survey length, and so they had to cut some questions out, like Bernie Sanders. But that's just, it's devoid of all logic, because he included two questions about hypotheticals for a Mike Pence matchup. So he's saying that it's more worthy to poll a question whose prerequisite is not only for the House to impeach, which I'm not convinced they will, but for a Republican Senate to impeach one of the most popular Republican presidents. He's saying that a question with that prerequisite is more worth polling than a Bernie Sanders hypothetical versus Trump, which is just utterly absurd.
And I thought it was also interesting in this email response, in this latter half of it, where he says, if you're concerned that Sanders is left out by that rationale, any poll that leaves out Bennett, Booker, or Steyer in a series of head-to-heads is just as problematic. And first of all, I thought it was kind of odd that Bennett would be on the tip of anyone's tongue talking about the presidential primary, but especially, you know, it just jumped out at me because, like, Bennett is sort of the anti-Bernie in terms of, you know, a single payer will never happen in this country kind of candidate. So it that kind of leapt out at me as part of I think it's a bias problem. I think it's somewhere in between unintentional and intentional, you know, but I don't see, at least yet, I haven't seen anyone report, you know, like this is the kind of thing where there was money or there's relationships that, you know, like I don't think Binder's associated with any campaign. You know, I wouldn't imagine that a political science professor at a state school would, you know, involve himself in a partisan political context. But all of this, and when we talked on direct message on DM, all of this is reminding me of 2018 and the polling in 2018, where and this happens in Florida a lot. I think that the folks who are at the top of campaigns and the folks who are at the top of polling research, when they put their heads together and they think about how they're going to gather data and how they're going to gather responses, I think that we often have our blinders on. And 2018 to me is a really good example of that, because it seems to me that the DeSantis was never really taken super seriously, and the polls repeatedly showed Gillum, at least towards the end of the race, that Gillum was beating DeSantis by 6 points. Let's see, Harris X has Gillum up by 5. Vox Populi, which is a B graded, I'm looking at 538, has Gillum at 6 points over. Let's get an A rated. Marist College has Gillum up by 5. Emerson by 5. Quinnipiac, an A rated polling organization, had Gillum up by 7. And so when Election Day rolled around and these polls weren't predictive of what happened on Election Day, a lot of people within the party said, we have a polling problem. There's something going on where we're not gathering the data that we need to gather. So do you have any thoughts on the how this gets us in a pickle if we're not doing the representative polling?
Well, this gets into the category of the unintentional bias that I mentioned. I think that a lot of the problem comes from polling likely voters, because that's what we do. We poll likely voters, so it's people who voted in the last two or three elections, you know, and there's a problem with that because specifically for the Democrats, it's not the likely voters that they need to win over to win the elections. The problem with Democrats is they need to bring out non-voters and the unlikely voters in order to win the elections. Because if it was just a numbers game of, likely voters, I mean, it would go to the Democrats in a slam dunk. We've got 250,000 more Democrats than Republicans here in Florida, and yet we lose the statewide elections almost every time. It's not a problem of likely voters. And that's a big problem with our polling, because it's hyper-focused on those people.
Well, and it's a problem within campaigns, too, because I know from that side of things, more often than not, and the more establishment the campaign is, the more that this is the case, in terms of outreach and, you know, touching voters, the way that it gets broken down is campaigns want to touch super voters first and then kind of go down the line, touch the person who votes in every single election and then prioritize them. And then the next person would be maybe the people who only vote in the big elections and so on and so forth. And the, I think that younger people coming up in the party have been challenging that successfully. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez famously says, you know, she won her election by talking to voters who didn't vote, by bringing those people into the into voting. So they would be invisible to her opponent's campaign if her opponent was running a traditional campaign, totally invisible threat. And here comes AOC winning that race stunningly because she had a strategy that no one took seriously. No one ever thinks of unlikely voters.
Yeah, exactly. AOC won her election, even though she was outspent 10-1, because she had a strong leftist platform and she had an amazing ground game. She got out the voters she needed to get out, the unlikely voters, and her opponent never saw it coming. And he's bitter about it to this day. And that's exactly my point. So the concern with polling, I know there are a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters who are maybe worried because he dips in the polls every now and then. But you have to understand that his strategy is much like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's, and that it's unpollable. He's targeting the unlikely voters, the non-voters, and you can't poll for that. In 2016, he often outperformed the polls because he got those voters out and he had an inspiring message and a good ground game, and this time around it's even better. So what I would say is don't be too worried about polls like this. Polling is important. I think generally they are fairly accurate and worth looking at, but specifically for candidates like AOC and Bernie Sanders, they should probably be taken with a grain of salt because their strategy just doesn't, it's just not compatible.
Mm-hmm. I wholeheartedly agree, and I think that a lot of the wins that we saw, the upsets that we saw Bernie Sanders take in the 2016 primaries, I'm thinking of Michigan, for instance. So I talked recently about how I think that the opposition noticed that he was probably going to win at the last minute because there were some pretty harsh attacks on him the day of voting. But going up to that primary, I don't think that they saw him coming at all. I think that Michigan is probably the kind of state, I lived for 20 years in Tennessee and watched NAFTA gut the industrial base, the blue collar jobs all went away during the time that I was living there, start to finish. And I think that when that happens to an area, people stop voting because they've been alienated from the system. And so when it takes what I keep calling a circuit breaker candidate to come around to bring those people back to the polls.
Sure. And you've also got a problem with people who are in communities that have been devastated like that, is they're just struggling to survive. They don't have the time to take out of their day, to take off work or whatever, to go to the polls and vote. They just don't have the time for that. And that's why election reform, like a national holiday or whatever, is incredibly important.
I absolutely agree. Yeah.
And your point about them not really seeing Bernie coming is still true. I think they still don't take him seriously. They for sure didn't take him seriously until at least like the third quarter in fundraising. They were still burying him in negative press, and they still do it, but they started reporting a little bit positively about at least his fundraising numbers, because that's the only thing they typically care about. But they still don't take him seriously, and that's why I think you've got what happened in this poll at our lab, is because the people running it just don't take them seriously until they let them out.
Right. And that's why I wanted to kind of appreciate for a moment that it sounds like the process by which you guys are doing your polling is super high quality. Like a lot of campaigns just do the call fire thing and they work with robocalls, which you got to understand you're getting different kinds of responses when you do that kind of polling as opposed to live polling. If the instrument is developed correctly and there isn't bias built into it, this kind of polling should be the best kind of polling. It should be, you know, getting the most rich data, it seems to me. And so you just gotta have better, you know, better input. So like garbage in, garbage out. You gotta have better input on the front end and the design so that, you know, so that the results are more meaningful. And honestly, you know, this poll, okay, for showing Biden and Warren up against Trump and Pence, it actually was surprising to me that the lower polling candidates might not beat Trump or Pence, or Trump rather, the Buttigieg and Kamala Harris. Mayor Pete would beat them by just 1 point. And I think Trump beats Kamala Harris by 3 percentage points. And Pete Buttigieg is actually beat by Donald Trump. So the lower polling candidates, the ones who aren't in the top tier, now that Kamala Harris is no longer in the top tier, they don't beat Donald Trump. So this idea that a ham sandwich could beat the pants off of Donald Trump in the general election, at least at this point, this kind of data isn't bearing that out, that it takes a top tier candidate to actually bring that home.
Absolutely. And first, yes, our operation is supposed to be very good. I believe we get a B+ or an A- from 538. Like our methodology is solid, which is why, like in the year and a half I've worked here, I've been pretty happy with what I've seen. And that's why this poll was such a shock to me. But you're right that I think once again, just like in the last election, people are underestimating Donald Trump. And it's just so dangerous because you've got these polls showing these centrist candidates losing to him. And yes, Biden's winning, but he also has massive name recognition and he hasn't been put against him in the general. I mean, Biden supposedly was a great debater back in the day, but if you've seen him on stage now, he's just floundering. He can barely put together a sentence. Trump will drag him in a general election. I mean, he can't possibly counter any of the populist arguments that Trump is going to throw out there again, because he's going to do it. He's going to say, I brought back your jobs. I'm pulling troops out of the Middle East, even though he isn't. He's going to make those arguments, and they're going to land again. And people just aren't taking it seriously enough.
Right, right. And I think that I absolutely feel that. I think that we get really caught in our silos. So, you know, our sociological silos are very real. If you're a professional managerial class person, you're not going to have much opportunity to talk to, you know, truck drivers or, you know, people in service industry, unless you're on the other side and you're ordering your food at the restaurant or whatever it is. And so it's like you only see what is right in front of you. And if everybody right in front of you is your same class, you know, your same economic class, your same kind of educational background, then that's going to seem like the whole dang world to you. And vice versa, it works for people at the other end too. You know, like, you know, all the Sanders supporters back here are like, I think that it's very easy to imagine that everybody else in the world is reasonable and logical about policy, and that's not, that is not often the case. Sometimes people, you know, cast votes just because they feel like that guy's a fun guy to drink beer with.
Yeah, it's a real bummer, because when you do polling in America on the individual issues, Americans are so far left. They want single-payer health care. They want free college. They want to end the wars. They want universal daycare. They want paid family leave. They want all of it. But then once you put a candidate's face to those policies, they don't know what they're doing anymore. It's wild. I don't understand it.
Well, I talk about this a lot with a colleague who does a show called Slow Newsday, and there's an element of manufacturing consent, but there's also an element of manufacturing confusion. And so I think that a lot of what I'm hearing on the left is that the news media is not reflecting an accurate picture of what's really going on in the United States. And, you know, our alternative outlets to kind of, you know, get a better picture of things can only do so much. I mean, independent media isn't even supported by independent left-leaning, you know, funders. So, which is actually good, you know, like I wouldn't want SEIU coming in and, you know, totally funding, say, like a publication, because, you know, then you're just getting, you know, that kind of news. I think that news needs to remain independent. And yet, that's not the case with corporate media. Corporate media is thoroughly supported by corporatists and centrists and big moneyed interests that those kind of political partisans are going to pander to 100%.
Absolutely. And when you listen to the mainstream media, you get this picture of the economy that's just absolutely false. So if you're watching the news, you get this idea that the economy is doing great. Trump's actually doing it. Stock market's up or whatever. But that's not reflective of how real people are affected. Wages are so stagnant. Jobs are being deported. Tariffs are hurting us. But the mainstream media just passes right by that stuff. Never talks about it.
Do you have as somebody who works in this industry or this area of reporting and information gathering, do you have a sense of, like, if you were to design a polling agency that could do the kind of research that would get a reflection of anybody but these likely voters, like, can we do that? Is that possible? Is it cost prohibitive? Do you have any views on how to kind of design a better poll?
Is it possible? Yes. Is it cost prohibitive? Yes. In order to do something like that, you would need basically a census level operation, which would cost hundreds of millions of dollars. It's just not feasible. It's so difficult to get a representative sample from that large of a group. And I don't know, there's just so many problems with polling. And one of the other unintentional biases, I know people complain a lot about oversampling landline phone users.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, I'm sympathetic to the complaint and I understand it, but it's, at least for my lab, like, it's not our fault. It's not that we have these lists of numbers, right, and we can see, oh, this is a landline, this is a cell phone. We only get that information once we've gotten the poll completed. Usually the very last question is, hey, have I got you on a landline or a cell phone? So we just don't have that data. We just call and call and call, and the people most likely to pick up and respond are older people with landlines. It's just how it is. We can't do anything about that.
Do you have a, do you know whether or not your data is pulled from L2 or from VAN, or what is the source of the original data and generation of phone numbers?
I'm going to be honest. The line that we are given is we got these numbers from the public voter files. Who we bought the number from, I'm not sure.
I gotcha. So, yeah, that's actually one way that VAN can be very expensive for campaigns. And so one thing that insurgent campaigns can do is you can go to the supervisor of election and you can get public information, just voter rolls. And yeah. I'm not sure if they show or to what degree they show who voted in which year, kind of thing. I don't know if it's as detailed as VAN or L2, but you can do that, and then you can go to a digital company that will number match, and that can be a lot less expensive for, say, somebody running for city council with a universe of 1,200 people. You know, you can do that, and it makes sense. I know that when I'm working with the VAN and I'm working with people in the VAN, we try to populate more information into the VAN. So we try to bring cell phone numbers into the VAN, and we try to bring other means of communicating with folks into the VAN, which is very important for text messaging kind of hustles now. The kids, they're doing the hustles these days. And that's very important. But in order to get those numbers for cell phones, generally, even campaigns are contracting with a third party to do the matching. And having done it myself, I know that there is a lot of spoilage there. There's you're not always getting what you think you're getting. And you're not going to get 100% of anyone's numbers.
Sure. And it depends on the poll. But we do have the information on whether they voted in the previous elections. Usually it goes back to 2014 or 2012. We don't usually look for anything further than that. But we do usually have that information when we're doing specifically election polling.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things that is often cited as a criticism of recent polling is the way that the demographics are weighted in terms of age demographics and, to a lesser degree, education demographics. Do you have any thoughts on things that you've seen recently where age demographics have been either used well or abused? Because I know CNN did a poll today that is receiving a lot of criticism because it looks like they left out one whole demographic of age range, and it was one in the middle. It was like 30 to 45, something like that.
That's today?
Yeah, it was a CNN poll. And
because
it was just real
small. They did.
Go ahead.
Because I remember they did a poll a couple months ago that did the same thing. They left out like the entire 30 to 45 range.
Oh, well, this is the same thing all over again. Yeah, it's 30 to 45, I believe. And I'm looking for a screenshot because I know I took one earlier. And, you know, one of the things that I've reached out to pollsters before in the past is to get reaction to specific polls and the way that they have weighted the senior citizens versus young people, you know, like whether they're going to vote. Do you have a sense of, say, like just generally a sense of what percent is a reasonable percent for senior citizens 65 and older to be included in a poll?
Oh, that's hard. I guess if you really wanted to answer that question, you'd have to look at actual exit polling to compare it to, but no one does exit polls anymore for some reason.
Yeah, for some that's
reason,
a problem.
But we know the reason.
We know the reason. It's interesting. Exit polling is the gold standard in every other country for determining the fidelity of the election, of the tallies. And for some reason in the United States, after 2004, I think it was, after all of the craziness that happened in Ohio, exit polling has somehow fallen out of favor right at the time when it seems we could use it the most.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. And you've got people screaming and shouting in Congress and on the media for the last 2 years about election meddling and election interference, and yet that's all they do about it, is they scream and shout about it instead of proposing actual election reforms that would help solve these problems that they swear they're super passionate about. It's another instance of things just not being taken seriously.
Yeah, and you know, that it is really... I think that the theme of what's kind of emerging from this particular episode is that quote unquote not being taken seriously problem is real, you know. Another thing I wanted to ask you. Oh yeah, do you have is somebody who's familiar with the business? Is there a polling outfit that you particularly look towards as a good source? Like when you're looking for polling data, where do you go? What is your best source?
Well, it's hard because I want to say to just go to 538. And I think it's fine to say, if you just look at the polls, don't look at Nate Silver anymore. Don't look at what he has to say anymore. He's gone off the rails. But 538 is still good for the actual polling data.
And they actually present their data most of the time. They present their data in a manner that is that is organized visually, in a way that doesn't get in the way of the data, and actually I think kind of helps it. And I noticed that they just did a bunch of hires for visual data people, and that's, you know, folks that are working on these infographics, which is, you know, people who do these kind of data graphics are kind of the unsung heroes of the hobby that we all have. I don't think that people understand exactly how difficult it is to organize information like this. This isn't easy. So last thoughts. How are you doing? Has anything, or is your boss cool? Are you going to work tomorrow?
Funnily enough, I have not been fired yet. It wasn't brought up at all today, so either he hasn't seen it or we're cool. I guess we'll see as the day's gone. I do have work tomorrow, so we'll see what happens, I guess. But as of now, I'm fine. I know a lot of people have been reaching out to, like, hope I don't get punished or to offer me financial support if I need it, but I'm fine.
We were discussing a GoFundMe in one of my DM groups yesterday. So just give us the word if anything happens. Absolutely. But I wanted to bring you on to talk, and I wanted to be very careful and respectful of the organization and the business, because I think that that doesn't do anybody any good at this point, especially you, but also I don't think that that's particularly the issue. I think this being taken seriously thing is, it's kind of systemic. It's not just, in other words, it's not just within this group. I think that it's something that as a movement, we need to be very careful to be addressing. And so while criticism is deserved on this particular poll, I do look forward to much more coming out of the public opinion research lab at UNF doing some work that is you know, tip top, and more Florida stuff that's tip top, because we really need better polling in Florida. That is the dog's honest truth. Ellie, thank you so much. Is there anything that I've left out that you would want to mention?
I don't think so, but to anyone who was willing to help me with a GoFundMe, I urge you instead to donate to Bernie Sanders. I'm fine. Even if I lose my job, I'm in a good privileged position where it won't ruin my life. I won't be out on the street. Donate it to Bernie Sanders instead so we can get this movement. Just keep going. We got to get people on the ground to keep with the strategy that I mentioned.
Right on. Ellie, thank you so much for coming on. This was so enlightening, and I'm very happy to meet you, and I'm very glad that you're speaking out like this. And it really gives me hope, you know. And I think every time somebody does this, it gives everybody else a little bit more courage to speak up when they see something that's not quite as good as it could be. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. You guys, that was Ellie the leftist talking about the situation yesterday. I had mentioned to Ellie that I was particularly, I really felt where she was at professionally in this, because I've been in her position before in the past. When I was very young, I worked at an advertising agency. A lot of our clients were in the healthcare industry. So we had hospitals and we had doctors groups, and we we did advertising and marketing for managed care kind of stuff that was just starting to gain traction at that particular time in the 90s. And I happened to, and also this agency didn't offer insurance, but at the time when I lived in Tennessee, there was a kind of weird socialized medicine insurance concept called 10-care. So Tennessee, like 10-care, like Obamacare or whatever, that you would qualify for if your business didn't provide insurance. And so a lot of people who've listened to the show for a long time, I've talked about my chronic conditions and what it's like to be a spoonie and, you know, a person that deals with chronic pain. These issues were just starting to crop up when I was in my late 20s and I was working at this advertising agency. So I had recently done some ads for a new practice that had just opened up in town called Families Our Specialty, which indicated to me that they were doing family practice. And I think that family practice is an awesome thing. I'm a big partisan for family practice and general practitioners and all of that stuff, you know, rather than, you know, going straight to internal medicine or, you know, going higher up the ladder. I think it's really important to have a relationship with a doctor that you know and that you trust and da da da. So I was like, okay, new guys in town, there are clients, and I'm gonna go find out why I'm feeling bad. And so I went in, and this gruff, much older gentleman starts asking me all of these really odd questions about, like, my sexual history and, you know, whether I'd been abused as a child and, you know, if I had the most important thing, and if I had any kids or if I had been pregnant. And so, yes, I said I had been pregnant, but I don't have any kids. You know, he kind of did the math and he looked out from over his glasses and he was like, did you terminate a pregnancy? And I was like, yeah, I did. Okay. You know, what are you going to do? Which was not cool with this guy, which I, as a young person, was completely of the mind that you go to a doctor, you are completely open with your medical history because you do not know whether or not something in your history is affecting your condition right now. So I just, a priori, I had trust in medical practitioners. And that was a mistake with this guy, because the very next thing he said is that you need to, he was like, I can't help you. You need to find a church that will take you. And a little passive aggressive shit there, you know, that will take you. And he also said, if you wanted to be a patient at this particular family practice, that you needed to go through, he had like a 12-step program that was designed for people who have done bad things, like who are gay or who, you know, have terminated pregnancy, designed to bring them, you know, back to life or whatever. It's just this total hokey crap. And of course you had to pay, you know, hundreds of dollars a month to go to these meetings, and that lasted forever and yada, yada, yada. It was a grift is what that was. That was a grift. And so I had a friend at the local newspaper what do you know? He was on the healthcare beat. And I just happened to mention it to him one day when I was at the paper dropping off some ads. And that became a story. It became a front page story above the fold on a Sunday. So it was became fairly well-known news. I actually had another friend who had gone to see the folks in the practice, because they were the only practice in town that took 10 care, by the way. If you're familiar with Medicaid and you're familiar with how difficult it can be to find a practitioner that takes Medicaid, rather Medicare, Medicaid, it was just like that. You know, because this was newer and it was like considered lower than like Medicaid. And a friend of mine who worked with the local theater group that I sat on the board of, he had had a similar experience, and they told him to find himself a church that would take his gay ass. And and so, you know, we had this conversation like, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just go public with this, because this is not right. And my friend at the theater was like, I'll speak on the record, but anonymously. And we did that. And oh my God, my bosses were not amused. I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, I don't even think I thought to there, but I mean, like, I didn't get fired or anything. I love these guys. They gave me this amazing piece of stained glass that I'm looking at right now. Just actually the best people that I've ever worked for in advertising. Just I can't say enough about how cool they were. And boy, they weren't, well, the husband wasn't amused. The wife was actually kind of amused. They were like, don't do that again. And I was like, yeah, I didn't think that all the way through, did I? That kind of reflects back on us. Like, yes. But anyway, that's just one example of a way that I have, you know, done something similar. And, you know, it's a, I think a lot of us on the left, have that whistleblower's gene in us. That is like, people need to know that something up ahead is dangerous, something up ahead is bad, and something should be done about it. And I think that's where this tendency comes from. So listen up, whistleblowers and troublemakers, send me a DM. Let's talk about it on the air sometime, because, you know, there's nothing more cool than someone who sticks to their principles and, you know, takes a chance and lets everyone else in the world know that, you know, that they're not alone. So I'll leave you with that. I'll give you some outro music here, and I will see you again definitely on Sunday, maybe before then. We'll see how things go. But for now, keep being cool.